Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's in with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. Hello, Thursday. Did you hear that beeping? Can you hear this as well? No, you can't. Anyway, I'm about to go to the supermarket, but it's not going to stop raining. But enough of my problems. How's things? Good? Good week? Thanks so much for the lovely feedback on last week's episode, the listener Q&A. We've only done a couple of those, haven't we? And they're kind of nice. I think they're enjoyable. I don't think we should do a lot. But every now and again, it's always lovely to connect with you all and answer your questions. Now, speaking of questions, I did ask if you would like me to pose questions to this week's guest. It's John Sim. But you know what? Time ran away. We just didn't have time to ask him a question. So I'm sorry for all those people that did send in questions for John. We didn't get down to them, but forget about that. It doesn't matter, because this week's episode with John Sim is an absolute peach. I've known John for many years, and we've worked together a few times, and it's just great to sit down with him and have a cup of tea. He's known for such dramatic roles on telly and on stage. But if anybody saw him, which it comes up in the conversation, if anybody saw him at the Bush Theatre in the West End in Elling, which is a play that is based on a brilliant film, actually, he's hilarious. And he's hilarious in real life. He's such good company. And I'm so pleased that he was in Manchester and he pressed the doorbell and popped round for a cup of tea and a good natter, which is what this is. Now, if you support us on Patreon, there is a little video up there of John and me. And also, very soon, you will find out who... Well, later on today, if you're on Patreon supporters, you'll find out who next week's guest is. And also, she came round my house today and we had a brilliant, brilliant conversation. You're going to absolutely love it. It's a pearler. So what happened? So it was Monday. It was Valentine's Day. I don't really buy into that. But I could not think of anybody else that I would love to spend my Valentine's morning and have a cup of tea with and a natter than the remarkable Mr. John Sim. This is Season 9, Episode 13 of the Two Shot Podcast. Yeah. It's John Sim. You know, the actor off the telly. Here we go. I'll see you at the end.
That's for people of a certain age, you'll remember that.
Alas, Smith and Jones.
Yeah. It was very good.
Yeah, it was very good. And the comedy element was the fact that there was a cowboy show called...
Alias Smith and Jones. Going back even further.
Yes, and I used to love that show.
Yeah, I did. It was quite the Saturday Night Tea Time show, wasn't
it? Yeah. It was like the Dukes of Hazzard, but in sort of Western times.
Which is what we need.
Exactly, yeah.
Je t'aime, John Sim, je t'aime. What do we think about Valentine's Day? And you can answer in two different ways. You can give me your honest answer, and you can give me the answer just in case Mrs. Sim listens and we can just edit which one out.
I think it's for courting couples, isn't it? It's for, like, young lovers and, you know...
I think so.
Isn't it? I've sent her a card.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Because I'm not going to be there. I'm not there. So, sent her a card. No, I don't know if we even usually do that.
I only say that because, two things. I just went to go and get some blueberries from the co-op around the corner and there was a young lad liberating between two really crap bunches of cauliflowers. Either way, mate, I'm sure you're pretty much fucked.
Yeah.
But I used to know a guy, and every year, I'm going back in my early 20s, used to get a Valentine's card delivered from his mum.
Oh, my God.
And I thought that was a bit odd.
It's all right for the first, when you're quite young and he doesn't get one from anyone else and his mum's trying to make him feel better.
It's kind of sweet, but if it carries on into your early 20s...
That's not sweet. That's weird.
I'd have a word, really.
Yeah. You want to reevaluate your relationship with your mother.
in deep therapy.
Yeah. The two of you together. Come on, talk it out.
I was doing some interviews earlier in the year and they were talking about... Inevitably, they're talking about the North and Blackpool and training and growing up and all that. And they were saying, well, who were you looking at? Who was influencing you? Who opened the door for you and said, oh, you could possibly do it? And I cited you as one and also, like, Thulis, because there wasn't, like, loads of people on telly that I went, oh, well, they're from my area. Who was anybody that you were looking at when you were growing up and thinking...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there was actually. That's weird because we did go to the same college, didn't we? Mm. But not at the same time.
No, we'll get onto that later.
Well, mine was Tom Courtney.
Right.
Tom Courtney and Albert Finney, I think. I mean, the first time I ever was aware of acting was Rebel Without a Cause and then Billy Liar. I watched him in Billy Liar. I watched Rebel Without a Cause. I thought, wow, that's a good job. He's really cool. Mm. I like that jacket, et cetera, et cetera. And then I thought, well, but that's not for the likes of me.
Well, that's it.
And then I saw Tom Courtney and Albert Finney, you know, and thought, oh, they're Northern. I sound like them. So surely it must be doable.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, I looked up to them. But at college, at the Blackpool College, it was a complete mistake because I was in deepest, darkest Lancashire in a place called Nelson. And they've got a college called Nelson and Cohen College, which is apparently the drama course wasn't very good. But I was just very lucky because the drama teacher at school took pity on me and got me into Blackpool College. Which was a good one, wasn't it? The one we went to.
Well, it was the one, Blackpool and Fire College was the one that everybody from around the North seemed to go to. Because I remember people travelling great distances every day to come. Were you travelling from Nelson every day?
No, I had, because it was just too far to do that.
Yeah, it is.
Thank God. Mm. So I basically left home at 16 and went to, I went home at weekends because I was still doing the clubs. I was doing the clubs with my dad. And so I'd go home at weekends.
What were you doing in the clubs?
I was. We were a club act. We used to play guitar.
Right. Okay.
So he was a club artist, and by that point, I'd been doing it since I was about 11 or 12. And so I was always busy at the weekends and at like Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. So you know, but I always had money. At that age, because I don't think it was fair, the money thing. I think he took most of it. I had some.
Yeah. Better than probably a paper round or a milk round or something like that.
Yeah, much better than that. But I never went out anyway, so I never spent it. But so I'd go home at weekends and do the clubs and then go back to college on Sunday night. That was the thing. So we had, I was in a boarding house in St. Anne's. A few boarding houses. I lived with a family called the Coxes, and then lived in a place called Orchie Court.
I know Orchie Court, yeah.
It was known as Orgy Court.
Yes, I bet it was.
For some reason.
That's a different podcast altogether.
Yeah. We just had a lot of fun. You know, it was great. And we did musicals. Did you do musicals there?
Yeah.
They did the musicals, didn't they?
Yeah, because you always do a musical. And you got to do it at the Grand Theatre.
At the Grand Theatre.
Did you do West Side Story?
Did Guys and Dolls.
Guys
and
Dolls!
West Side Story,
that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, and so both those are very dear to me, even to this day. And what it did with Blackpool College was, it was really good, but it made me realise I didn't want to do musicals, even though I did enjoy doing West Side Story, especially West Side Story. But I thought, that's not actually what I want to do, so... I joined an amateur dramatic society outside of college, and we did Billy Liar and Amadeus, and I ended up doing you know, touring and doing things with them. So I started doing straight plays in my spare time because I thought that I think I want to do that instead of that.
That's so interesting because I was talking about getting thrown out of Amtram the other week.
Wait, did you get thrown out?
Well, yeah.
Where in Blackpool?
In St Anne's.
Did you?
Yeah.
Which one was it? Maybe it was the same one. Was it Fylde Coast Players?
No, it wasn't Fylde Coast Players because, no, it wasn't. Because I think, I don't know why, but I found it quite hard to find amateur groups that just did straight plays.
Right, right.
So I went in at 16 and they were doing like Annie and, you know.
Yeah.
Fucking yeah. Annie Get Your Gun yeah. and, you know, they do a pantomime at Lowther Pavilion and things like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then, you know, and then I opened my big mouth and it all went to shit.
Yeah.
But best laid plans, don't best laid plans. So yeah. The doing the straight plays, were you getting nice parts in the amateur stuff early on?
Yeah, well, the reason I started, because when I was at school, this drama teacher, I never did drama at school. I didn't, there was a...
Was it an option?
It was an option, and I played football, so I didn't do it. I did football instead. And like I saw Rebel Without a Cause, and I, for some reason, stopped the drama teacher as he walked past me. He's called Mr. Wellock, Brian Wellock. And I knew he was a drama teacher and he was also the art teacher. But I'd never spoken to him ever before, ever. I think it was in the fourth year. And I stopped him walking down the corridor. I went, oh, I saw Rebel Without a Cause last night and I thought it was brilliant. And if he'd have just left, said, oh, right, why are you telling me? And carried on. My life would have been completely different. It's like a sliding doors moment, you know.
Mm.
And he didn't, though. He stopped and he went, oh, right. He went, and you are? And I went, oh, John Sim, I'm not in any of your classes. And he went, so what? Why did you think it was brilliant? And I just talked about it for a bit. And he just talked to me like an adult. He just sat and we had a chat. And he, you know, we chatted about it. And then he went, well, here's an idea. Why don't you come to one of the drama classes? And I said, oh, I do football. He said, well, just one time, just come to the drama class. And they were doing Billy Liar. And there was a guy called Paul Jowett who he ended up at Blackpool College as well.
Right.
I think he's dead now, actually, I think, very sadly. But he was playing Billy Liar. I think, oh no, there was an audition for Billy Liar. Anyway, I went in and read. And it's one of those things, you know, I'm sure you had the same thing. You do it, the first time you do it, you kind of think, oh, and people go, wow, you're really good at this. And you go, really? You know, it's like, I thought it was like, I'm just reading it, you know, and just, anyway, so I thought, yeah, okay, great, okay, they're saying I'm really good at it. And I got down to the last two for Billy Liar.
Right.
And he got it because he used to babysit for the drama teacher. And I was so angry about that. I was angry.
Right, so you obviously really wanted it.
I really wanted it. Because I'd seen the film and I thought, oh, this is amazing, you know. But I was a fourth year, he was never going to give it to me. But anyway, so I ended up being in the chorus and that was the first time I was ever on stage. And then I was the lead the next year when he'd gone. But anyway, so when it came up in Blackpool, I saw it. They were auditioning for it. I thought, right, I'm going to get it. I'm going to play that part. So I did, I got it. And I ended up playing it eventually.
So you were doing that in tandem with the initial training at Blackpool Fylde College?
Yeah, I'd do it like on Thursday and Tuesdays and rehearse and then, you know, so I was quite busy.
I've got really busy because I remember being thrown in at 16 and they were long days. Sometimes you were leaving there at 7, 8 at night and starting at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, the rehearsals and all that,
especially
for the shows.
Yeah.
But I just immersed myself in it because we did O-levels as well. You know, we had to do proper lessons, which I wasn't interested in at all.
No.
I think I did 3D design, sociology. I just never went. I can't believe they didn't throw me out. But, so I just got really into the rehearsal thing and the reading and the, you know, yeah. So the straight plays were, I thought, was where it's at, even though the musicals were fun. Until the third year when they did The Boyfriend, which I hated.
And I was
the lead in it.
Because it was the style of it.
Oh, I hated it. Hated the music. I hated all of it. Hated it. And I literally did it with gritted teeth. I had to wear a pillbox hat and do a stupid tap dance. And it was awful. It was set in the 20s. Hated it. And that put me off for life. And that was it. So
We're done.
Me and musical theatre. Yeah.
When did you start to gain knowledge of the next step? Because the next step there was to go to London and go to drama school.
Yeah.
Who was helping you out with all that? Were you just digging deep and finding out for yourself?
Digging deep and finding out for myself. And everybody auditioned, didn't they? If I remember rightly, you'd sort of get auditions for drama school.
But there were some people I remember at the end of mine who were going, yeah, it's not for me, this. I'm not going to carry on.
I think that's good, isn't it? Because and, you know, at that early age, and a lot of them, there were some like older pupils that, well, they were older then. They were probably like in their early
20s. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought they were old. But yeah, and some people would think, actually, you know what? I thought I was going to do it, but I'm not, you know. And that's brilliant, I think. Because, you know...
Well, how fantastic at such a young age that they know that that isn't for them.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I remember going back from graduating at drama school and going, them going, yeah, after all that, after these 3 years, no, it's not for me.
Yeah.
But great that they know.
Yeah, 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 yeah. They've got it out of their system.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, and it was just, how did I get to London? I think I auditioned for Manchester.
Mm.
What was it called? The one that John Thompson and Steve Coogan went to.
I think it was called the Manchester Poly, wasn't it?
Yeah, the drama thing there.
Yeah.
And I remember that because I remember going to stay... There was a guy called Neil Gallery who had left the year before for Blackpool.
Name.
Yeah. And he lived with John Thompson and Steve Coogan. I stayed with him. And I remember it because it's the first time I actually heard the Rolling Stones. He was playing Exile on Main Street. And I remember saying, who's this? And he said, it's the Rolling Stones. And that was a game changer also.
Wow.
So I remember that night. And we went to the pub and Steve Coogan and John Thompson were students there. And I just remember them being really funny and that we had a great time. Anyway, I didn't get in. I was gutted.
What age was this? Was it 18?
Yeah, 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I auditioned for RADA. I didn't get in. I used to come down to Liverpool, to London quite a lot, you know, an audition, and I think I auditioned for Central or Lambda. I can't remember. Mm. There was a few. I didn't get in. The one that I got in. I got into two. I think I got into Arts Ed and Drama Centre. Two very different vibes.
Two very very different schools. And the just to interrupt before you carry on, my first introduction to any drama school was the BBC documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Drama Centre.
Was it? Yeah, yeah. Oh.
And I remember seeing you on that documentary.
I kept away. I didn't know I was hardly
in it. I saw you. I mean, it was flashed up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't one that was vying for the camera by any stretch. But it terrified me. As a 15 or 16-year-old or whatever I was, I thought, is that? That's what they do.
Yeah, it was an extreme drama school, let's put it that way.
Let's talk about it, because it hasn't come up in all these years, really, Drama Centre. I've had people who have maybe not gone to drama school when I'm talking to actors, but some that have gone to RADA and had, like, awful times, or other drama schools, and had really terrible times. But Drama Centre training back then, I'm sure it's probably changed.
Well, is it a thing now? Is it still there? I think it's gone.
Oh, it's gone now, is it?
I think so.
I think you're probably right.
It went to a college. It became part of a college. It was, for me, it was gone. And, you know, not to, you know, to diss anybody that, you know, but for me, because I was a traditionalist, it was Christopher Fettes and Yap Malmgren. Mm. They were the two things, the big draws of that place. And
they're quite famous for it, aren't
yeah,
they? I mean, they're so well associated with that school.
Yeah, and it was in Chalk Farm. And then it moved and they weren't there. And after that, I thought, well, is that Drama Centre? I don't know. I'm sure, you know, they carried on the traditions and I'm sure it was really good. I'm sure it was a great school. I think it joined St. Martin's College or something.
Right.
Anyway, but yeah, after that, I didn't really sort of pay much attention because, you know, I was gone and they were gone and that was that. It was a thing of the past. And also, I didn't really try. I tried not to think about it for too much because it was quite... We used to call it Trauma Centre and that's what it was known as.
Yeah.
And it was really, really, really full on. And I would not say that I enjoyed it. It wasn't enjoyable, really. There were moments, but my God, it was. Oh.
Was it quite deadly serious training?
Yeah. It was really, really intense. And you know, it just wasn't a holiday camp. It really wasn't. It was, we used to go and do ballet for hours in the morning in like these leotards in this black room, you know, getting hit with a stick if your foot wasn't high enough. And it was just, it was like above and beyond anything you're ever going to come up against. And there was the sword of Damocles hanging over your head the whole time. And Yat's work, Yap Malmgren, it was like math to me. I just didn't get it. There were diagrams involved and we would talk about movement psychology and it was really difficult. And I felt really stupid when I was there, because when I arrived, I just felt, I realised I wasn't that well read. And so on top of everything else, of the rehearsals and the plays, and, you know, we'd do these like obscure Russian plays, and on top of all that, I would read you know, away from the school. I would start reading Dostoevsky and Dickens, and, you know, try and educate myself. So I get like I did at St. Anne's. I would do extra curricular stuff to try and catch up,
speed,
get
yeah.
up, you know. Mm. And so that's what I did. I just taught myself. And I will say one thing, you know, it gave me an education, you know, even by default. It was like, okay, I now I'm quite well read. After those 3 years, I'd read loads.
Yeah.
And broke down loads of barriers and thought, actually, that's really good. That's not scary. That's really good. But eventually the movement psychology and the diagrams, they started to make sense when we stood up and did it. And I thought, oh, is that all that is? Is that what that is? You know, all these diagrams and things, that's what that means. And I thought, well, isn't that obvious? You know, I thought that. And then I thought, I'm at the wrong drama school here. I think I might be at the wrong place. But having said that, it was an amazing training. And I think they could have got, you know, they could have dragged anyone from the street, from anywhere. And if they'd adhered to all these rules and, you know, over 3 years, they would become a competent actor. And I think it was like by numbers, they would knock you down and then they would build you up again. And I didn't like the being knocked down.
No.
Because I'm sure I had something before. And it's kind of like, I don't need to be completely crushed in order to be rebuilt in your image.
In your mold.
Yeah,
yeah,
in your mold.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I rebelled against it a little bit. And I did try and leave. At one point, I walked out halfway through the second year, because people would just get thrown out all the time.
Well, I was going to say, it was always the same. You're always scared that you wouldn't make the cut.
Terrified, yeah. And it was quite a fearful place, you know, it was brutal. And but I ducked my way and dived my way underneath everything and somehow got through it. And then thought, halfway through the second year, I've got to get out of here. I can't do this. So I...
Was it just draining you?
Yeah, it was terrifying. And for some reason, I'd moved down from the north with a girlfriend. I shouldn't have done that. You know, she came with me and she got a job. And then I ended up getting jobs in bars because I was skint. Obviously, yeah, we were all skint.
Yeah.
And it was just a really tough time, you know, living in horrible bedsits. And, you know, it was grim in 80s London, you know. Yeah. And so I, at one point, I walked out and I auditioned for Blood Brothers in the West End because I was working as an usher there. And I thought, I could do that. I've done musicals. So I took my guitar.
Did you see my Tony?
Yeah. Riff.
Oh, you were riff.
Riff.
Right.
Yeah, riff. But no one saw my riff. and so I went in with my guitar and I used to busk. I used to go down King's Cross and busk and try and earn money. I mean, I still can't quite believe I did that. But I went in with my guitar and auditioned for Blood. I think I sang like an Eddie Cochran song and sort of auditioned for it. And lied and said I had left college and I'd got an agent, but I'd forgotten the CV. It was just nonsense.
I mean, they're going to fall for that.
For God's sake, yeah. I mean, anyway, I didn't get it. So that was one time. And then I sent off forms to try and audition for RADA again. I thought, I'm going to try it again with RADA.
Right.
And I didn't end up going back. And then another time, this was the last time, I got so sick of it. I walked out of a lesson. I went to the office, said, I'm leaving. That's it. We're done. I'm finished. And I walked out and I just wandered out into the street. And it's in Chalk Farm, so I walked down to Camden.
Yeah.
And the old Everyman cinema, you know, where you could smoke in it and, you know, it was there. It's not there anymore. But weirdly, I thought, I'm just going to go into that cinema, I'm going to watch whatever's on, and I'm just going to sit at the back and think, what have I just done? You know? And what was on was David Thewlis in Naked.
It wasn't.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And I walked into that cinema, and that was what was showing. Just one of those, again, sliding door moment.
Absolutely.
And I sat at the back and it blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. And I thought, I'm going back. So I went back about 2.5 hours later, walked up to the office and I went, I didn't mean it. And I went back and went, okay, you ready? And they were great. They went, go on then. You know, you can go into lessons still going on. And so I walked back in and sat down and that was the end.
They must have had, over the years, other students do that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then just pivot and come back in and go, do you know what I said?
Yeah.
I didn't mean it.
Yeah. And do you know what? Christopher loved me. He was terrifying, but he was an incredible man. And I think he's still alive. He's very old now, but what an incredible man. And so is Yat. And you know, but the main guy for me at that place was Reuven Adiv. He was the acting teacher, and he was like Lee Strasberg's assistant, and he used to teach Paul Newman and Marilyn Monroe, and regale us with tales of all these massive superstars, you know, back in the day. And he was wonderful.
Wow.
He was just wonderful. And so his classes, they really, really, really changed my life. And I'll always be in debt to him because he was the main guy for me. And Christopher, he was lovely, Christopher, to me. He was, you know, I just ducked my way around it. One time he came up to me and he went, "You have a tendency to be very lazy, which is unforgivable." But understandable. And he sort of gave me this, I went, "What does that mean? I mean, what are you saying there? What are you saying? You're saying that I, you know," he said, "it's fine. You just carry on." And then they gave me the leads and I got an agent and I left and it was fine. So it was all right in the end.
Mm.
But at the beginning, it was really heavy, you know. But yeah, I got through it.
But you do have to go through it.
You just got to go through it, yeah.
What were they like on a whole with the students, especially in the third year, about, right, you're going out. Go on, you're going out into it now.
Yeah.
Did they prepare you for failure?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what they talked about a lot. You know, it's like, you know, you're probably not going to work. You know, if you're lucky, you might, you know, get a bit part in a touring production of Uncle Vanya or something. But it was all classical theatre training. There was nothing else. I mean, we actually, weirdly, in the second year, we did Merrily We Roll Along, Sondheim musical. Weirdly, so maybe they were trying to prepare you for something else, but I don't remember ever doing any camera training ever.
Not even like half an hour.
No, I don't remember doing
it.
We might have done, but I don't remember. I remember we had an actor come in and talk to us about it, but that was it. And you know, when you were first year, you were the crew for the third year showing. So right. You would just work your ass off all the time. It's like, you know, it's like being the equivalent of a boot boy in a football club. Used to shine their boots and we were the extras if they needed crowds or anything like that. So it was absolutely relentless. But yeah, it was a great training in the end. It was, you know, I'm glad I went, actually.
So how was it stepping out into the
Well,
real world.
Yeah, it was really.
or the unreal world.
Yeah, I know. It was never as bad as that, and they were right. You know, it's like we will prepare you, and you will go above and beyond whatever you're going to, you know, come across in real life, I think. But again, you know, I was kind of blessed and lucky, and I got an agent. We did, I used to get the leads, and we did the Mysteries.
Right.
And me and Joe Dattine were these 100-year-old priests under loads of makeup and Caiaphas and Annas. And I thought, how am I going to get an agent?
Looking like this.
I was sort of walking on with a hunchback and like sort of like, you know, like the emperor from a Star Wars. And I'm thinking, I'm 19. I'm like, this is not what, I'm not going to get cast as this.
Yeah. You know?
Anyway, so we did. It was great. It was great fun. But I thought, oh, no, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then the year after that, the next term, we did The Possessed, which is Dostoevsky, but Camus. It was a translation by Camus. And I played Peter Verkhovensky, I think it was called that. I can't remember. I just plucked that out of nowhere. And he was one of the leads, and it was a great part. And I got an agent. And I got an agent a term before we left, and he got me a job straight away on Rumpole of the Bailey. And so I left early, and they let me go. And they were great. They were great. And after doing 3 years of intense classical theatre training, I didn't work in the theatre for about 8, 9 years. And so I had to learn camera technique on the hoof.
Yeah.
You know, and luckily we had Heartbeat and The Bill. And so I did my little apprenticeship on camera.
Which was, in those times, that was television rep.
That was television rep. And, you know, especially The Bill. I mean, that was like rep for producers, actors, writers, directors, wasn't it? It was invaluable, and it was gutty when it was pulled. That
it's a shame because it's such a brilliant training ground. Everybody from our generation and prior has been through it.
Yeah, yeah. You do Casualty or The Bill, or you know, and you'd be on it. You've been in it, but you know,
yeah. Sometimes you'd bounce. you know, you go and do three episodes of The Bill and you go and do a Casualty.
Yeah.
And you go, well, that's like a few months of my life. And now I've learned shitloads about being in front of a camera or, you know, working with a crew or working with an ensemble of people or working doing a two-hander or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just stuff that you wouldn't... You don't learn in those 3 years.
No, exactly.
It is. It's such a shame that that's, things like that have been pulled.
Yeah, I agree.
Is there really an equivalent now?
I don't think there is. I mean, Casualty is still on. You know, episodic, you know, you get guest artists in every episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there must be some. I don't watch loads of telly, but, you know, there must
be. That turnaround of The Bill, because I think at its height, wasn't it on like 3 times a week?
Yeah.
Possibly more.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah, yeah.
The cameras were constantly rolling on The Bill.
And there were two units, weren't there?
Yeah.
They were filming at the same, blue and red or something, and yeah, it was great. I remember on The Bill, I uttered the immortal lines, I'm going to walk away from this. You got nothing on me.
Oh, that's it.
in the interview room. It was great. I loved it. And then I did a sitcom really early on as well with David Threlfall. And he was like a hero of mine because he did Smike and he did that famous Smike in The Great Expectations. He was like, that was mad because that was that was not what I was used to be doing, you know, a comedy. But there was an audience and there was cameras. That was like really confusing. So you'd film it live, you know.
Of course, because there's like, with those with the studio audience, you've got them there and you've got at least 3 cameras, possibly more.
Yeah, so you can do it again if you mess it up.
Yeah, but also, you know, you've only got those audience there for 2 or 3 hours, really.
Yeah. So you rehearse it all week, like a mini play, and then... If you mess up or they get the camera wrong or something else, they'll do the scene again. And they had, was it Ted Robbins was the warm-up guy? Yeah, and it was great, actually. That was a real learning curve for me as well. That was great because that was, do you play to the audience or do you play for the camera?
That's the thing.
Difficult.
I remember when I first did it and exactly the same. I was going, oh, no, I can't play this.
Yeah, like, it'd be too big.
Like we're having a conversation.
No,
and
then,
of course, I can't play it like we're on a stage because there's...
Yeah, it's going to be like, right up in your face.
Yeah, exactly. So where do you pitch? And
difficult.
Yeah, it's really hard because in that week of rehearsal, the cameras aren't there.
No.
It's only when you go into a studio in the morning and they're all there and then you're constantly tweaking and turning up and turning down. But you're right. What did you learn in that? Is that like, right, that's not what I want to do.
No, well, kind of. I thought that's not what I want to do.
Yeah.
But...
Which is... I think it's really important.
Really important. To know. Yeah, almost like the musical thing. I never thought about it, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've done it, and I think I don't want to do that.
But it happens, because... Well, I mean, I've already talked about me on this, because it's naff, but my first job straight out of graduation was a musical in the West End.
Was it? What was it?
And I can't sing, John. I can't dance.
What was the musical?
I'm just 6'4" and I've got a deep voice. It was the best acting I've ever done. I totally blanked it. It was Martin Guerre in the West End.
Oh, right, yeah.
And there's like sort of dance that's a bit like a cloggy tap dance. It's really hard work. And I was just, you know, when you just go, I am so underqualified for this job.
Yeah, what am I doing here?
What am I doing? you know those times early on, you go, they've definitely picked up the wrong...
Imposter syndrome.
Oh, absolutely. But like to the height of a 21-year-old getting a check every week and go, and I've also given, I've got to understudy somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And then on the other hand, do you go back to working in Pizza Hut in Wood Green?
So
working at the pub.
What's best?
I'll carry on doing this for a bit. You know? Yes. But saying that, that made me go, I can't do this.
Yeah,
I don't, this is not in my skill set. So it's good to go through things and go, this is not for me.
Yeah, you get it out of the way, I guess. You try it and you know.
Oh, I try. I mean, you try it.
Yeah, you blag it. But also, that is a learning curve, isn't it? Because you find yourself in those situations. It's the same as like leaving home at 16 or 18 and coming to London. I mean, especially then, you know, you're on your own. At that age, you know, I've got a 20-year-old boy now, and I can't imagine him doing that. Not that he would have to, because he was born in London. But from when we were, where we were, it was like we had to get out of there. We had to leave there and come to London. And so... It was terrifying. And so when you find yourself in those situations, travelling on trains and you've missed the train and you're on your own and there were no mobile phones and all that kind of stuff and you've got to get a job because you can't afford the bedsit rent and you're also studying and you might get thrown out and, you know, it made you grow up, you know.
Yeah, quick.
Absolutely, yeah, quick. And you know, survival mode. And that's also the same, isn't it? If you find yourself on stage in a musical and you think, what am I doing here? But your survival mode will get you through that job.
Oh, and it did.
And it did, yeah. Yeah.
I remember when I first came down to London when I was just on the cusp of 18. I hadn't been on a tube before and I'd got all my bags for drama school and I was leaving at Euston. I'd never been on a tube. Yeah. You know what it's like on a tube? It's nice and comfy. You're swaying in and out.
Fell asleep.
Woke up Heathrow. Not only did I not get off, I got on the wrong tube on the opposite...
Heathrow?
Yeah.
Where were you supposed to be going?
Wood Green.
That is a learning curve.
It really was.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was seemed like a long... That was a long journey.
Oh, that is a long journey.
I mean, I'd just done Preston to Euston, which... Back in those days, was really long. Like it's much quicker now.
Yeah.
Did you? Because I know a lot of Northerners did this. I'm sure people still do, but I gravitate to more Northerners in London.
Yeah. Because there was
whether by accident or not.
Yeah, you sort of do, don't you? It's just weird, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the beginning, I did know a couple of people. Which was really lucky. I knew Craig Kelly, who'd been to college with me in Blackpool.
Of course, yeah.
And I knew Ken Christiansen, who was also at college in Blackpool.
I always remember... I've never met Ken Christiansen, but I always remember his name. Like, yeah. The Blackpool Fire College went, that's a good name. It's a strong name.
Yeah. So we knew each other, so we sort of, you know, stuck together a little bit. And so that helps, you know. So you weren't completely on your own.
Yeah.
But you were real. I mean, you know, it was fend for yourself, really. You know, in actual life itself. But yeah, you sort of like.
And once you go into the auditions, then you're completely naked and on your own.
Forget it. So, but yeah, no, I think I did graduate, and also, like I said, I came down with my girlfriend, which was a massive mistake. I don't know why I did that. I thought I was in love, and I was 17. I think I got engaged.
Shit.
I think I did. Yeah, I don't know if it was serious, but I definitely bought a ring. But that was another learning curve, you know.
When did the relationship fizzle out?
You live and learn.
did it last the full 3 years of drama school?
No, it didn't. Not by the end, no. She got a job in a bar and she was running this bar and I was working in the bar. With the bar, I used to dance in a cage in cycling shorts.
Whoa. Let's back right up.
Podcast exclusive.
Yeah. It's a strong image.
No, I'm sure I've said this before, so because maybe I just said it to someone in private. it was called the Buzz Bar in Leicester Square, and I had a T-shirt saying Buzz on it, and I used to cycling shorts and a vest. And when they played either Grease Lightning, YMCA, Venus by Bananarama, I can't remember the other one. But we'd have to jump up and do a dance routine.
You had dance routines set for specific songs.
We did the dance routine for the song, and this is as well as working behind the bar in the West End. And drunken businessmen, and it was packed, and it was the 80s. It was a nightmare. We lived together, and she ended up running off with the DJ.
Did she?
She did. I can laugh about it now.
There's you trapped in a cage.
At the time. Oh, you must have thought I was a right pillock, you know.
Earn a crust at such a young age. If it means dancing in a cage.
Listen, it was £5 an hour. And then...
That was good money.
That was good money.
Yeah.
And then, so when I left there, by some sort of thrown out in the end, I ended up working at the Albury Theatre. It was the Albury Theatre. I think it's not that now, is it? That's where Blood Brothers was on.
No, the Phoenix Theatre. It's now.
Oh, it moved to the Phoenix.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Is it now the Noel Coward? Whatever it's called. It's just up from the Duke of York's.
On St Martin's Lane?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I worked there and ended up being an usher, which was perfect. I loved that. That was great. It wasn't as much money, but I was in the theatre. I just love being in theatre, you know. But yeah, so it's a terrible job. So terrible, you know, learning curves, like sort of don't get engaged at 17 and bring your girlfriend down to London with you when you're at drama centre.
We've all been there, surely.
I know. Stupid.
How was auditions for you? Because obviously you said you were quite lucky to come out of the traps and get a job straight away and do that sort of television rep.
Yeah.
But how did you find auditions in the early days? Because then, you know, then...
I was quite cocky. Well, then. Yeah. I'd sort of a lot of confidence and I was quite mouthy. I sort of played up the northern thing, you know, because at the time...
I think everybody plays up the northern thing when they're younger.
Yeah, do you think?
Yeah,
and
well,
especially
I
at that
did.
Time because it was the Mondays and the Roses and you know, and we being northern was really cool.
It
wasn't
was
it?
Very cool to be northern. And yeah. Also, you've got to remember, it was, you know, Cracker was about to sort of burst open.
Yeah.
And nobody had seen any television like that before because it really sort of grabbed you by the scruff of the neck and slapped you around the face.
Yeah. That was the game changer for me, Cracker.
Was that the job?
That was the job, yeah. That changed everything, yeah. Because up until then, I'd played a lead in some things and, you know, I'd done bits and bobs, but then Cracker was a massive... It was just serendipity, Cracker, because the episode of Cracker that I did was written by Paul Abbott. So I got Paul Abbott and Jimmy McGovern on side and I worked with Liam Cunningham. It was like a two-hander.
Yeah.
And it was just a dream job. And I remember Liam Cunningham coming into the trailer on the first day and said, it doesn't get much better than this, kid. It does not get much better than this. And I thought, yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm like, got to really, don't mess this up, you know. And then that was that. And then because of that, I got the Lakes, Jimmy McGovern, of course.
Yeah.
And then that was, it changed everything. Yeah.
And it kind of just sort of snowballed
and
from there, didn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The black leather jacket just kept coming back for years. I just remember, what? John's always got his black leather jacket on.
I know. I've had to get rid of it. You know, I don't do it anymore.
But, well, the brown one came back a bit on Life on Mars. Surely.
Yeah, but I had a black one on Life on Mars.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I was really cocky at the beginning. I'm terrible at auditions now. And it got later on, it was terrible. And then I remember doing theatre in like 1996. I did at the Bush.
Which, for those that don't know, is one of the tiniest spaces in London.
Yeah, it was then. It was above a pub in Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah.
And that was terrifying because I hadn't been on stage since I left. And that was brilliant. I loved doing that. And then I didn't do theatre again. For 10 years.
Did you feel a need at that moment at the Bush that I've got to do this now?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it might not ever happen.
Yeah, I just thought, I really miss it. I miss it. And filming was great fun and everything. New. It was new to me and it was brilliant.
But you'd been learning so much on camera at that point.
Yeah.
So you started to feel quite comfortable in front of the camera.
Quite comfortable in front of the camera. It was, even though it was still quite exciting.
Yeah.
But,
Still is.
It's got more exciting. Life on Mars sort of did me in as far as that's concerned, because I was in every scene of that. And I eventually didn't feel anything at all when the light went on. And that was a problem. Because I was in every scene. It was just relentless. It was like a line learning exercise. It was like, I cannot learn these lines in time. And so straight after Life on Mars, I went back to the theatre and did Elling. But what I hadn't realised, I went back to the Bush. What I hadn't realised is that I'd been on telly, so it was packed. You know, and it was like, oh, my God. And that was terrifying. And
a lot of pressure.
Never had that before. And then that went into the West End. And it was so terrifying, but such fun.
And also, it was a two-hander.
It was more or less, yeah.
Yeah.
There
was mainly you and A.D. Bauer.
Yeah. But it was brilliant, and it went down really well. And after that, I thought, don't ever leave it that long again. And ever since then, I've tried to do it every year, or every other year, I've been back on stage, and I just got back into theatre again. But the first one in the 90s, Goldhawk Road, was great, and Neil Stewart was in it, and that's where I met Neil.
That's because I saw it at the Bush.
Did you?
Yeah.
Goldhawk Road?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, in that tiny little sweaty black box.
Yes.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah, and that was Paul Miller who directed that, and Simon Bent who went. And when I went back and did theatre, I worked with Paul Miller and Simon Bent on Elling, and then me and Paul Miller did Hamlet and Macbeth. And you know, it's like, you know, stick to what you know. So every time I do theatre, I'd like grab Paul Miller, and you know.
But also stick working with people where you've got a shorthand.
I always
love it when I go back and do a new project on camera with a director or a producer or a writer that I've worked with before, especially a director.
Yes.
Because it's like, I know what you need
and
you know what I can give you.
Yeah.
So we don't need to waste too much time. We can just get on with it and try and get the best take possible.
Yeah, that's true.
I love a shorthand.
Yeah,
and that must be like that, especially with theatre as well.
Yeah, I think so. In the rehearsal, it really helps. But also, I absolutely agree with you about... the director of filming. That's happened a lot. Like S.J. Clarkson, who did a lot of Life on Mars, I worked with her a lot. And weirdly enough, John Alexander, who directed the first episode of Grace,
yeah.
I knew him.
Yeah.
And so that was great. And you're right, you do. You get something for nothing there. And you cut out a lot of nonsense.
Well, yeah, but it's time and investment and, you know, testament to all the years of grafting and working really hard and trying to get up through the ranks and trying to work with really interesting, brilliant people.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you worked with John when he was just starting out, because I think John, am I right in saying John came from documentaries?
I think he did,
I think he did.
Yeah, that's I think he did.
I worked with him
very
early on.
Yeah.
He'd just come into drama. I don't really talk about jobs that much on this because I find it's kind of dull. But when you got the script for Life on Mars, did you go, this could be absolute dog shit?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of bonkers on the page.
Ridiculous. Yeah, I threw it in the bin. I got to the bit where he wakes up in the 70s and I went, what? And I turned back and went, what? I was like, what? Is there some pages missing? I was like, what's going on? And I just could not get my head around it.
Yeah.
And I rang my agent and I went, and she said, did you read that script? I went, oh, yeah, that's, forget that. And she went, oh, no, I think that's going to be really good. She went, where is it? I said, it's in the bin. She went, take it out of the bin and read it again. I went, oh, okay. God bless her, you know.
But isn't it important to have somebody that not only, you know, guides you, but steers your career and goes, no.
Yeah.
You know, for this instance, take it back out of the bin.
Yeah, trust me.
Trust me.
Trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah, this again, is why, why you pay me.
But see, that relationship is about trust.
Absolutely.
But trust is a two-way thing.
Yeah, and you have to trust them.
I know, but I speak to so many younger actors who are terrified of their agents.
Really?
And I go, well, that's just because you haven't been working for a bit. It's fine, we've all not been working. It's just the way it is. Don't be terrified of ringing them up or dropping them an email. It's a relationship.
And
whatever, it's a friendship or it's a romantic relationship or it's a relationship at work,
It
has to have investment. You have to invest in it. You have to work it.
Yeah.
Don't
it's
be
very
scared
true.
Of it.
Yeah.
Imagine being in a loving relationship and you're terrified of your boyfriend or your girlfriend.
I'm sure that happens.
I'm sure. Well, I know it happens. Yeah, I'm sure. But, like, that's not a relationship, is it?
No.
Think about it like that.
It's certainly not a healthy relationship.
It's certainly not. No. Yeah, exactly.
No. But so, you know, yeah, I've got a great relationship with my agent. She's great. And I completely trust her. And she's absolutely right. And then I read it and finished it. I thought, oh, do you know what? If this works, it could be absolutely brilliant, or it could be absolute dog shit.
If it works. But the thing is, those types of scripts come along every so often.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but every so often.
Yeah.
And you go, it's worth a gamble. It's definitely worth a gamble.
Yeah. Let's give it a go.
Yeah. Well, didn't work in America, though, did it?
No. It's weird, isn't it, with America? Because they do. That happened with Elling. We had this hit play in the West End, and it was a smash hit. And for some reason, they wanted to take it to America, and they wanted to take me, not Paul Miller or any of the other cast, to take me doing that performance of Elling with a different director and a whole different cast and do it again. And I was like, but it's the whole production, which is, that won't be the same production. They wanted like some star, American star to play AD's part, and I can't remember his name now. But it was a terrible idea. And so I said no.
But how many terrible ideas are there? It, you know,
it closed after 2 weeks.
Did it? Oh, so they went to do it?
They did it, recast it, different production, different. It's like the same play, but like, what? How dare you?
It's
you
know? Working because of all these components.
Absolutely, yeah.
Every part of this machine is running so efficiently because of everybody in it.
Yeah.
If you take one out...
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore.
It's ridiculous.
So they did it with Life on Mars, and they at one point they used to remake everything I was ever in. It's like the State of Play. And you know, I was like, oh, come on.
But Life on Mars, because and I didn't mean to be disparaging about the American remake there at all, because I haven't seen it,
but you look
at it and you go, yeah, that could go, that could work.
It was Harvey Keitel, wasn't it?
I think it was Harvey Keitel and Michael Imperioli.
Mm. Yeah. You
know, Christopher from The Sopranos.
Yeah.
And it's Life on Mars, and it's 70, this could go.
Yeah. But having said that, Life on Mars was kind of a pastiche of 70s cop shows. Like, Starsky and Hutch and the Sweeney. Yeah, it's like, so it's, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I know that they messed up the ending somehow. I think they made it, it was on a spaceship or something. It was literally, they were on a mission to Mars.
Wow.
They were all on a spaceship. I know, I thought that, but I haven't seen it, so I cannot comment.
No.
But that's what I heard. And yeah, it didn't work.
But the thing is, the Life on Mars here had great, it had a great sense of humour. It was aware of itself. I thought it was always very, I thought it was very funny.
Yeah,
as well,
it was funny. Yeah.
Can we talk about film and certainly early film?
Yeah.
Because we all know how hard it is to get low budget films made now. But when you were starting off, and I'm talking about, there was straight to DVD films at that point and like human traffic and stuff like that. There seemed to be quite a nice little machine going here. Yeah. In the UK and also in Wales and in Scotland. And it seems to have slowed down quite a lot now.
Yeah.
You don't get as many
sort of independent
indie films come through.
No. And there's more content now, isn't there? There's so many things being made.
Yeah.
I mean, if you turn on Sky Movies now, there's like films, the new releases, and you've never heard of them.
No.
And like, was that on the cinema? Because if it was, I missed it. And maybe it wasn't, and it just went straight here. And there are so many of them, and full of massive stars. And it's daunting now. You think, how is a young actor going to get in? You know, how will a young actor get a lead if he's an unknown? I mean, sometimes they do it. I think maybe they, you know, more in on the continent, maybe they'll trust in young talent, I don't know, but I don't know if they do anymore. And I don't know. Yeah, it's a shame. But you're right that at that point there was a real buzz about independent films.
Yeah,
wasn't there? I mean,
seemed to be very cool.
Yeah, they were.
There seemed to be there was never any budget, but I always think back. There was a lot of trust given.
Yeah.
To new writers and new directors going, that's the director, you cast who you want.
Yeah.
It's not going to be cast by the 17 backers and producers. It's your film, it's your story.
Yeah. And that was exciting.
Yeah.
I remember doing one called Boston Kickout in the 90s.
Yeah.
And that was exactly that. And absolutely no budget whatsoever. but what a buzz, because you're part of it,
you know,
and you're on board, and you don't care about the fact there's no budget, you're not getting paid or anything, you invest in it, and it was all, you know, the writer was young, and everybody, we're all in the same boat, and it was just exciting, you know. Loved doing it.
And a sense of freedom.
Yeah, massively, yeah.
And was it like that on Human Traffic, just to pin one film down at that?
Human Traffic was absolutely like that. It was. We didn't audition. We just went to. I talked to Justin Kerrigan and basically said, "Have you been out? Have you taken any pills?" And at that point, I'm not saying I had, Craig. No. But at that point, me and Sean Parks, that was our life. Me and Sean Parks, we went clubbing. That's what we did. That was when we read the script. We went, "Oh my god, oh my god,
this is us.
That's us." Yeah, so we went in.
Thousands and thousands of other people.
It was such a massive, that youth culture at that time, you know, it was the biggest thing on the planet, youth culture-wise. And I think at that point they'd had that Criminal Justice Act where they'd banned repetitive beats. Remember that?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. So they say, no, you can't have raves and fields. So everybody, of course, went and had a rave in a field. And so it was a huge, the culture of it was massive. The clubbing that went on, I don't know if it's like that anymore. I'm not sure. I don't know. But it was a big deal. And this was at the arse end of the 90s. And I, you know, we just thought, well, that is absolutely bang on. I've never read anything that captures it. And Justin Kerrigan was a clubber, and that was it. And it was his first film, and, you know.
I mean, you can so tell he was a clubber.
You can, yeah.
In that film.
And he's great in it as well, Justin.
How the night is structured in the story-wise isn't, for those that used to go clubbing, we don't do that anymore.
No.
Old.
Good God, no.
Could you imagine?
Could you imagine?
John, that is just such a perfect place to end this episode.
Okay.
Thank you for spending your romantic Valentine's Day with me.
There was no one I would rather spend Valentine's Day with, Craig. That's not strictly true, but I'm saying it.
Can we make sure we edit that last bit? Okay, cheers, John. Loads of love, mate. Thank you.
You too, mate.
And another episode is done. Yeah? Everything and more. As you know, we don't go into too many shows, but, you know, it's nice to look back at John's varied career a little bit. But he's just great company, isn't he? And that is John, you know, in a nutshell. Great company, very funny, lots of stories. But yeah, it was a joy. And also, it's so, I say it on next week's episode, and you can find out who next week's guest is if you support us over on Patreon. Okay. It's just nice. It's such a joy having people come round the house for a cup of tea and we just get down to it. I hope you hear a difference in the way the conversations are conducted that are in person. Next week's is in person as well, so hopefully... hopefully. You're definitely in for a treat. It's great. She is great. That's the only clue I'm giving you. Okay, well, that's it. Thank you so much for downloading, subscribing, telling your friends. Go do that. I never really asked this. Do you want to go and leave us a review? Do it on the Apple Podcasts or wherever. Do other people do it? I don't know. Anyway, Apple Podcasts, do it. Go and give however many stars you believe we deserve and tell us what you like. That's always a nice thing to do. If you want to support us on Patreon, we're patreon.com/twoshotpod. You can donate and support these free conversations that I hope you feel you're not getting from any other podcast. I mean, my God, how many podcasts are there? I don't know, everybody's doing a podcast, but the thing is, we're an independent podcast. We always have been an independent podcast. We started this from scratch with zero listeners, zero followers, zero support. And it's really important to support independent podcasts because there are a lot of celebrities now, and that's fine. They're doing their podcasts, they're getting paid from a company, they're getting paid to do their big live shows, sometimes in huge arenas, and that's it's fine, yeah? But support the little guys, and not just us. All independent podcasts deserve your ears and your support, and whether you're supporting financially or you're spreading the word, then, yeah, do that. That seems like a decent thing to do. Otherwise, we're just going to drown. And all you're going to get is the same conversations and the same people. And that's kind of what we pride ourselves here on not doing, not having the people on the podcast rounds, digging out the best stories and the best people. Speaking of the best people, you're the best people as well for supporting us and listening. Okay? I mean that. Thank you so, so much. So, let's go. Until next week. I've been Craig Parkinson, he's been producer Griff, and this has been the Two Shot Podcast. Hopefully I'll see you next Thursday when it's not raining. All right, take care. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson, recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.